If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. Nigel Thompson will tell us about the fallout after a couple of chaotic nights outside City Hall.
A police sergeant got attacked and was assaulted by one of the teenagers.
Then Mike DiNardo tells us why Temple University has decided not to accept what would have been the largest financial gift in school history.
After learning his company was under federal investigation for money laundering and wire fraud.
A rally to try and stop the closure of the Academy of Natural Sciences Museum.
Organizers say more than 300 people came to the parkway.
Connor Barcon will have that story. Jim Melwert will tell us about a Bucks County 9/11 widow's 25-year journey to now.
There's no timeline for grief, and everyone handles it differently.
A look at the first renderings of the new arena slated for the sports complex.
It certainly looks really sleek, really modern.
Vic Raghupathy will give us his thoughts on the proposed design. And then Sharaday Howard tells us all about Goat-tober.
Philly, we love goats.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
We've been dealing with youth meeting up across the city on a regular basis for several months now. We are at a point where we are going to make some adjustments in our deployment.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with situations we saw early in the week outside of City Hall. Chaotic gatherings of young people leading to all kinds of problems. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW's Nigel Thompson. And Nigel, first of all, kind of give us the details of what was happening here.
This happened over Labor Day weekend, particularly Sunday and Monday. So the Sunday before Labor Day and then Labor Day. Basically what happened was there was these both days where there was these gatherings of possibly a couple hundred young people being rowdy, disorderly, and, you know, really it brought a large police response to kind of break up the groups and kind of tamp down some of the more disorderly elements of these groups.
Did things get violent, and what did we see as far as a police response?
On Sunday, we saw a couple arrests. We saw three young people get arrested. Three of them got arrested for disorderly conduct, robbery, and they also got firearms charges, so they were carrying guns. Seven other young people got hit with citations for disorderly conduct. And then on Monday, the police kind of knew that this was going to happen. They were a little bit more prepared, and so they brought a police presence, but yet more young people came and gathered again. 13 more people got arrested for similar charges, disorderly conduct. The instance Monday, it did get a little bit more violent. A police sergeant got attacked and was assaulted by one of the teenagers. It got pretty crazy on Monday. The police had to kind of step up for us and arrest a lot more people. It was an unfortunate thing to happen in Center City on Labor Day.
Do we know, like, are these things organized, and what do we know about the origin? Is there like a group behind them, or is this all kind of still to be determined?
I wouldn't say there's like a singular group behind any of these gatherings. I mean, these are organized on social media, just among young people, whether it be Instagram, you know, Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, whatever means the young people are connecting online. These are usually organized online, and then they meet up, you know, at times create chaos. I don't want to say it always devolves into chaos, but sometimes that does happen. It has happened recently.
Is it a new problem, or like, are we seeing these gatherings, but these have just kind of taken it to another level? Is there a specific reason why these ones stuck out? Was it because of kind of the level of chaos?
Yeah, I think these ones stuck out just because of the level of chaos and violence that came, and in combination with the police response. I think these things are not new, I should say that. I mean, I can remember when I was at Temple many years ago, they called them back then flash mobs. And it was like the young people, same thing. They would organize on social media somewhere, and then they'd organize to meet up, and then they'd meet up. And in the case, there were a couple that happened on Temple's campus where, you know, some Temple students got into it with some of the people that were gathering. And those were again, chaotic situations where the police had to respond kind of en masse and break up. I would not call these, you know, anything new. And yeah, I think these really just stuck out because they were violent.
So then on Tuesday, we heard from Philadelphia Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel.
We had a level of deployment down there to address the young people, but they still come despite knowing that the police officers are there.
He said the police will be changing their approach to these. What will they be changing?
The two things that I kind of took from the conversation he had with our crime and justice reporter, Kristen Johansson. One was, you know, they might begin to sort of try to identify these young people. It's almost like, but not identify them in as much of a public way. The way he phrased it was kind of identify them so that parents can see and kind of, you know, get parents involved in the process of kind of reining in their young people, kind of getting more involved, more engaged with sort of what they're engaging in their lives and online and, you know, outside of the home. That was one. So I identify them because he said a lot of them wear masks. So even though they wear masks and that they think that hides their identity, it really doesn't. They know who they are in some respects, so they can use that as kind of a deterrent. And the other thing, which he didn't really expand on, is he said that they may pursue some legislative action, you know, some sort of legislation to sort of beef up their enforcement. Have no idea what form that could take, what that could look like. I mean, they already have a mask ban in parks and on public transit. Maybe they need some more legislation to help enforce that. Maybe they need something else to sort of beef up their enforcement of curfews. Who knows what that would look like? But that was the other thing he said, that potentially they may go through city council or go through legislation to beef up enforcement.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it. Thank you very much, Nigel. KYW's Nigel Thompson getting us started. Much more to come on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to this edition of The Week in Philly. And this week, Temple University announced it is stepping away from the largest financial gift in its history. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo, who covered this story for us. Mike, lots to unpack here. First off, give us the details surrounding the original gift.
Yeah, Matt, it was just about a year ago, October of 2025, when Temple made the major announcement that Christopher Barnett from the class of 2010 was giving $55 million to the university. It was Temple's largest gift ever, and the school renamed its School of Public Health after Barnett. At the ceremony, they told the story of how, when Barnett first applied to Temple, he was denied admission, but camped outside the admission director's office until she agreed to meet with him.
I pleaded my case as if it were all on the line, and I made her a promise. If she reversed her decision, I would graduate with a 4.0 GPA, become a prominent alum, and give back to the university.
And he said the fact that he was given a chance inspired him to make his substantial pledge of $55 million.
That experience of being given an opportunity, of being invested in when the odds were uncertain, has shaped every part of me. And it's why I feel so strongly about investing in future generations of Temple students.
Barnett went on to found ABA Centers of America, which provides services to people with autism. $20 million of Barnett's gift was to go to an autism center at Temple.
So why did Temple make this decision to say thanks but no thanks?
Yeah, Temple decided to cut ties with Barnett after learning his company was under federal investigation for money laundering and wire fraud. The school, in a statement, said that Barnett strenuously denies the allegations and intends to defend them vigorously. But Temple President John Fries said it was a mutual decision that moving forward with the gift would not be in the best interests of Temple, and that Barnett wanted to avoid any negative impact on the university.
Barnett's company, as you mentioned, ABA Centers of America. What do we know about it, and what do we know about the why as far as an investigation is concerned?
Yeah, the centers provide autism services to children. The federal investigation was first reported by an industry publication called Behavioral Health Business, which said the feds were looking into whether ABA centers billed insurance companies for treatments that weren't necessary, and that the company changed the location where services were provided in order to get higher reimbursements. In court records, one former employee described the business as a giant billing mill. Barnett has not been charged, Matt, and again, he denies the allegations.
And is Temple severing all ties with Barnett in addition to this money? Wasn't he like a trustee on the board or something?
Yes, he was. He has resigned from Temple's board of trustees. His name was on the School of Public Health, but that is being removed. A newly opened essential needs hub at the student center at Temple will also no longer bear his name. And stories about his original gift appear to have been taken down from Temple's website.
So how much does this hurt Temple from the standpoint, like, had this money been budgeted already? Will cuts be necessary? Should we wait for another shoe to drop?
It's unclear. The school says although Barnett pledged $55 million, none of the payments had actually been made to Temple yet. And in an interview with the Inquirer, Temple President John Fry said that $20 million gift for an autism center would have to be, quote, rethought. And that essential services hub will continue, but the university will be looking to other donors to support it. Beyond that, Matt, it's not clear whether any cuts will be necessary.
Do we feel like this hurts Temple past the money, like just past not getting this gift? Is there any reputational damage or anything?
Well, it certainly stings, right? Fry, in his statement, acknowledged that stepping away from the gift is deeply disappointing for the Temple community, but he did point out that even without Barnett's $55 million, the last fiscal year was the most successful fundraising year in Temple's history, and that reflects confidence in the university's future.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. That's KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. We need to take another break. We will continue on with this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio right after this. It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
We've been coming here for years, and they've just been dragging this thing, and it's been a slow decline over the past 15 years, where they've watched it happen. God knows what John Fry was doing over Everett Drexel, but again, they haven't been proper stewards.
We continue on this edition of The Week in Philly, and the fallout continues from that announcement that the Academy of Natural Sciences is set to close its museum by the end of the month. This week, hundreds rallied outside the museum to protest the proposed closure, and for more, let's bring in KYW's Connor Barkon. And Connor, first off, remind us about the details. This first broke about a week and a half ago. Why was the decision made by Drexel University, who runs the museum, to close it?
The university blamed pandemic-driven financial pressure. Drexel says visitation patterns never quite returned to normal after the COVID lockdown, while museum costs, like the cost of just about everything, has continued to rise.
So now this rally on Tuesday, how big was it and what were the emotions? What were the people you talked to saying? Kind of going over your reports, it seemed like it was equal parts sadness and anger.
Definitely, Matt. Yeah. Current and former employees, parents, and supporters of the museum are feeling angry, and many were surprised to hear about the announced closure. Maggie Anton has volunteered at the museum since 2003.
I'm really sad. When I first heard it, I was like, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I never thought I'd have to say goodbye to the Academy. I thought the Academy would say goodbye to me. I'm 66. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so I'm just really in shock, really. Yeah, it's very sad.
Organizers say more than 300 people came to the parkway, and you remember this was the first workday after the Labor Day weekend, so that response is a testament to how much this museum means to the people of Philadelphia.
To that point, are there plans to do more past just this rally? Are there other ways people are working to try and keep the museum open?
There are definitely other ways. As of today, there's not another rally scheduled, but the organization Save the Academy, which organized the protest, has plenty of actions for people to take if that's something that they want to do. The website save-the-academy.org directs visitors to sign a petition and contact lawmakers. Organizers, they have said that they're not going to let this museum close without a fight, so they definitely want to get as many signatures on that petition as possible.
Assuming the closure does happen, do we know what the plan is for all the collections the museum houses? I mean, this had some really wonderful stuff in it.
Yeah, that was the hot topic at the rally. Everybody was talking to each other about what might happen to these collections, what is going to be their fate. Drexel has said the Academy will continue its work in scientific research, even though people will no longer be able to visit the museum. So, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, maybe they don't need every item in that entire collection. It's a collection of more than 19 million biological specimens. So protesters, they don't want to see it go to sale. But the decision makers could want to help the financial troubles that the Academy is facing by selling off some assets. But, you know, just to be clear, that's just speculation. The truth is plans for the collections have yet to emerge.
And assuming that nothing changes, what is the last date for people to take advantage and check out the museum?
The museum will officially close on September 30th, but the last chance for the public to see museum exhibits will be Sunday, September 27th.
Yeah, this is really a shame. I really enjoyed it. I went there a couple of years ago with the family, and it's really a cool place. It's really sad to see this happen.
It is sad. Yeah, my daughter and my wife, you know, we are planning outings now. You know, she's 1.5, so we can finally get out to a lot of these places and let her really experience them. And I think we heard about the closure the day after we said, oh, we should go to the Academy of Natural Sciences. So it's sad, you know, it's sad to think that, you know, the classic idea of a museum, right, when you look back at not just American history, but the history of the world and the history of life on planet Earth. It's sad to know that there's going to be a generation of children who won't grow up with that museum in Philadelphia.
And no doubt about it. Thank you very much, Connor. KYW's Connor Barkon joining us. Time for another break. We will continue with more of The Week in Philly right after this.
As people are gearing up for this anniversary, just to appreciate what is it that you have, because it can change quickly.
This is The Week in Philly, and Friday marked 25 years since the attacks of September 11th. It was a day of remembrance, honoring the memories of the thousands of people who were killed that tragic day, including a man from Bucks County who died in the World Trade Center. KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert spoke to his widow this week, and he joins us now with more. And Jim, you spoke with Tara Bain, who lost her husband, Michael. She has written a book, Evolution of a Heart, From the Dark of 9/11 to Rebuilding a Life and Finding Joy, a memoir. First off, tell us about what she experienced 25 years ago.
Tara and her husband, Michael, met in college.
He was a sweet, hardworking, funny, very athletic, and musically inclined guy. He was a few years older, and we just hit it off. We really connected.
The two lived in Hoboken out of college, then moved to Yardley. Michael would take the train to his job at Marsh & McLennan on the 100th floor of the World Trade Towers. Tara says September 11th, 2001 was just like any morning. Michael woke her up as he was leaving for work.
He kissed me. Good morning. And as he was walking out our bedroom door, I sat up and said, I love you. And he returned that. He said, I love you too. And he left.
Tara says she was running late, but on the way out of her house, she got one of those feelings that she just had to call Michael, which she says was out of the ordinary. They didn't typically call each other during the workday, but she says she got rapid, busy signals on both his office line and his cell phone. And she was driving into work. She heard on the radio that a plane had hit one of the towers. Then switching to a different radio station on a morning show, she heard the hosts much more frantic.
They were screaming, oh my God, a second plane hit. This is unbelievable. This is no accident. Like, they were in such a panic. And, you know, I've never heard that on anyone on radio before.
She got into her office, tried to call Michael again got those busy signals at this point, panicked and crying.
People were a little confused in my office because I was like, dude, what's going on with the World Trade Center? And they were like, oh yeah, a plane hit it. And no one really had a lot of information or seemed very heightened by this. And, you know, I had to remind them that my husband worked in the building.
She left work, went back home, and got there just in time to see the second tower come crashing down. She says she held out hope in the days and weeks that followed that Michael would come home.
Not until I saw with my own eyes the buildings, the rubble, not the buildings. When I went downtown, was I able to say, he's dead. He's not coming home.
So why did she decide to write a book?
Well, Tara is a trauma therapist using art to unlock parts of the brain that sort of hold that trauma. But she found when it came to her own loss, she struggled to come to terms with it eventually over the years, learning to live alongside of it and not so much trying to get rid of it, but accepting that it was there. She talks about those steps, noting there's no timeline for grief and everyone handles it differently. So this was kind of her way of sharing what she'd learned over the years.
And as you mentioned, she uses art to help herself process her grief. Kind of dig into that for me.
Yeah, she explains art therapy as a way to kind of get what's going on in your head out into a drawing, painting, or sculpture, and also kind of giving you the space to talk about it. Sometimes that talking with trauma is a challenge, and it can take a while to sort of talk around it and through it.
Trauma is stored in our brain in the right side, where the talking, the analytical stuff, that's all the left side of the brain. And so the art really works with the fragmented traumatic images in the brain to help incorporate it. And it's like a filing cabinet when things are all out of order and disarrayed and you can't find anything until you organize it. And that's what it's like to use the art, particularly with trauma and grief.
So how does she feel now, 25 years later?
Let's let her answer that question.
It is still hard. Sometimes I say it's like a funeral every year. And it's definitely, I'm definitely in a much healthier place right now, but I can't watch the news, particularly now with all the images that come on. And I won't do that. I try to protect my mental health in that way. But it's a catch-22 because I don't want people to forget. And there has to be this collective remembrance of this event because it was such a huge event for us as in society.
And there was a lot of reflection, obviously, on Friday, and there will continue to be going forward. What does she hope Americans think about when they kind of look back at 9/11 and the impact it's had?
Two main things. First, she says everyone who died that day was an individual.
Not everyone's going to be able to know everything about all of the victims, but just the idea of it, that they were humans, that human beings, that they were individuals that had families that missed them, and that the families hold vigil every year along with the whole nation.
And then second, as I think everyone kind of feels this, the unity that we saw in the country at the time.
Hug your loved ones a little closer because we don't know what tomorrow will bring, right? And so I think, you know, as people are gearing up for this anniversary and yeah, just to appreciate what is it that you have because it can change quickly.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. That's KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melward joining us. Before we head to break, KYW News Radio's Ian Bush compiled a montage of sound in remembrance of September 11th. Let's take a listen.
Margaret Ann Alario.
Michael Patrick Eichen.
Names printed on the ceiling of the night.
Loretta Ann Vera.
I wish I got to meet you. Love you.
I will forever cherish the memories we made at the shore.
Names wheeled in to the dim warehouse of memory.
I miss you terribly.
I wish you got to take me fishing.
I'm proud of your service.
We love you, Poppy.
Your three grandchildren are here today, all named in your honor.
Because if we hear their names, they are never forgotten, and they never disappear.
And to live in the hearts of those you leave behind means you never die.
So many names, there is barely room on the walls of the heart.
None of us will ever forget this day.
We remember,
and we will never forget.
Never forget.
As time moves forward,
we will never forget September 11th.
That vow becomes even more important.
1 year ago, this was a battle zone.
Pause to mark the fifth anniversary.
In the decades since 9/11, we have honored their memory.
Even though it's been 15 years, the pain and the loss have not diminished.
20 years feels like an eternity.
25 years after 9/11.
A quarter century.
But yet it still feels like yesterday.
100 million Americans now
were not yet born on 9/11.
When they hear never forget, what are they supposed to remember?
Feel completely lost on why it actually happened.
And so this anniversary offers us this really important opportunity.
This is a generational shift that we have.
I feel like it was a change, just like how COVID affected it.
To make sure that the stories, the lessons, the legacy of 9/11.
The path we follow is up to us.
Are preserved not just for this generation, but for generations to come.
Let us strive to be worthy of those we lost that morning.
It certainly looks like futuristic, but seeing a beautiful, newly renovated arena across the parking lot, it does feel a little silly.
This is the Week in Philly, and this week we got our first look at what the new arena for the Sixers, the Flyers, and Philly's eventual WNBA team could look like. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Vic Raghupathy. And Vic, we saw some renderings. They were pretty impressive. And this new arena will be where the Spectrum used to be. So kind of tell us about the design here.
Yeah, it's not only going to stand on the site of the old Spectrum, but it's, you know, inspired by the Spectrum. It's got that same sort of wide oval design that we've seen. It certainly looks a lot different from Xfinity Mobile Arena, which is a little more jagged in its design. And it promises to be this state-of-the-art, high-tech facility that, while you've got three good venues in the complex, we haven't really seen, because none of these venues are dilapidated by any means, but they've all been around for about a generation now. So it's supposed to be, I guess, an updating of the infrastructure there.
Anything you specifically like about the design, or anything that really jumped out at you?
It's hard not to be impressed by these sorts of visions. You know, it seems kind of far off, but it certainly looks really sleek, really modern. Personally, you know, no offense to the architects out there, I kind of care more about what it looks like on the inside, which we haven't really seen yet, but I like the nod to the past, and I think it's neat.
Now, did I see they're also talking about restaurants and stuff kind of surrounding it, and that would be in addition to what we've got down there now, right?
Yeah, and announcing this, the Sixers and Flyers say there's going to be about half an acre outside the stadium that will be turned into plazas. There will be restaurants, entertainment for fans. You know, right now, all fans have in the complex is Stateside Live, and there's been so much clamoring, you know, among fans for more to do. It's just a sea of parking lots now, essentially, and it seems like the teams want to help build up the fan experience around the stadiums. So it's not just you go there, you park, maybe you get a drink at Stateside Live, but you pretty much just go for the stadium.
So now, you spoke with fans and people here in the city about this. What did you hear from fans? What did they like? What did they think about what's coming down the pike?
Right. So, you know, it's easy to get excited about this kind of thing because it's a new thing. It's a shiny, bright, high-tech thing. And I think there's a lot of relief, or at least just happiness, that they're keeping it down at the complex. Obviously, we all remember the controversy of them, you know, making a push for a Center City, a Market East arena that had a lot of people pretty rightfully up in arms. So I think a lot of people are pleased that it's going to stay in the complex. That being said, pretty much everyone I talked to brought up, didn't they just renovate Xfinity Mobile Arena? You know, it's not a poor arena by any stretch of the imagination. It's been around 30 years, and, you know, so it's not new, but it's also not really old. It doesn't feel old. It doesn't feel like, it's not like the ceiling tiles are falling out and stuff like that. They just poured hundreds of millions of dollars into this thing. So I think people do kind of have a question of like, okay, why is this necessary? But I also think the fact that the Sixers and Flyers say that this is a fully privately funded and the biggest one, the biggest such project in the city, I think that assuages, you know, people's bad feelings about it, or feelings of why is it necessary, because, you know, at least it's not using public money. But I also think there are traffic holdups at the complex a lot, and so people were concerned, well, if there's a big, huge construction project going on for years. Is that going to make getting to the Phillies game even more annoying, you know, while this massive thing is going on? And the team's also promised this by 2030 or in 2030, because that's when we get the new WNBA team. And they want this arena up and running and ready to welcome that new WNBA team, which is a commendable vision. But things get in the way. Practically speaking, a lot of the people I talked to were like, is 2030 really feasible? Is that really going to happen? They want to break ground next year to be able to get this thing up in a matter of, you know, 3-4 years. But when you're talking about a huge state-of-the-art facility and the pace that things move at these days, the red tape, the things that might hold you up, is it really reasonable to expect this kind of facility to pop up there by 2030? I think people are a little skeptical.
All right. Thank you very much, Vic. KYW's Vic Raghupathy joining us. One last break on this edition of The Week in Philly. On the other side, we are going to get you ready for Goat-toberfest. What's that? You'll find out right after this. Final segment for this edition of The Week in Philly, and the city's most famous goats need a little financial help from the community. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Shara Day Howard. And Shara, first off, that was an odd sentence I just said. So explain for folks what the Philly Goat Project is and what it does.
So the Philly Goat Project is this wonderful little nonprofit in the heart of Albury Arboretum, and it's kind of on the cusp of Germantown and Mount Airy. So it's this little nook that not many people know of, but they house about maybe 20 to 30 goats there that really just brighten up everybody's day. They kind of remind you to slow down and enjoy the view.
Do they utilize them in the city? I know goats can be very effective eating stuff like poison ivy and stuff like that.
These goats have jobs. They not only get an opportunity to meet everyone and just be socialites as they are, but they also do help kind of prune the area, but they also teach youth. So they have youth educational programs that these goats forward. So that's why they need the money from these tickets for this Oktoberfest that we're going to be talking about. They also sell these amazing yearly goat calendars where the goats are, of course, the stars of the show.
But the Philly Goat Project is struggling financially. What are the issues here, and like, how much in the hole are they?
Yeah, well, it's a $20,000 issue. I mean, they're in the red. And like many people, the economy isn't so great right now. They're being hit hard, and the goats are no exception.
So as a result, they are gearing up for a big fundraiser, as you mentioned, next month. Give us the details of Goat-toberfest.
Goat-toberfest. You really just can't beat it. Philly, we love goats. We love goats because they're cute four-legged creatures, but also because, you know, referring to the greatest city of all time. But this Goat-toberfest is, other than their tree, their Christmas tree fundraiser, this is one of their largest fundraisers of the year. So if they don't make the money this year, if they don't sell out on tickets, which they're hoping to do, sell out on these tickets, then they're going to continue to be in the hole and not be able to afford all of these educational programming that they offer all the kids in the neighborhood. So Goat-toberfest is really vital to their financial well-being. So Goat-toberfest is going to be October 19th at Laurel Hill Cemetery. They're going to be offering everything from beer, craft beer, and a costume contest, even live music, you know, a chance to pet the goats. But you can't have a Halloween celebration with the goats and not have a creepy, creepy tour. You know, you're going to be in a cemetery. You got to have it all out.
How do people go about getting tickets? How can people learn more? And how much are the tickets going to be?
They're about $85, but you can offer what you like above $85 because they, of course, lean towards give a little more if you have a little more. You can get your tickets at phillygoatproject.org and just chill with the goats. Why not do, you know, two things at once? Hang with the goats and also help your community out.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you very much, Shara. That's KYW's Shara Day Howard joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd-Circa and Brian Seltzer. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.